Today on Real Ghost Stories Online, a normal babysitting job turns into a nightmare for one young child. Also, did a pet cat return from the dead only to engage in the same hijinks that he loved in life? A group of boys gets a shock of their life as they play with a Ouija board in a graveyard. Those stories and more today on Real Ghost Stories Online.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802. Or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You're about to enter the world of the unknown and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
Yes, it is. 855-853-4802, our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online. Ghostpodcast.com, our website, to get all the commercial-free advanced episodes of the program. If you like the show and you want to hear what everyone's going to hear a couple weeks in advance with no commercials in it, go to ghostpodcast.com. Sign up, $5 a month. Get that and EPP bonus episodes all there for $5 a month. Supporting the show, keeping it on the air, ghostpodcast.com. There's also a Patreon option there as well if you want to get your episodes through a Patreon player. Tony and Sean joining you on this fine day. And how are you?
Well, I'm good enough. I'm smart enough. And gosh darn it, people like me, Tony. Thank you for asking.
I'm glad you had a good self-affirmation right there. It's always important to start the show with one of those.
I was busy reading Pinterest boards the last couple hours, inspirational quotes, so I do apologize. I'm very ready to take on life.
Pinterest affirmation boards.
PABs is what we like to call them here in Arkansas.
That's great. Did you keep like pinning them to Facebook then and just random kind of passive aggressive quotes at people? Is that what you're working at?
Unnamed colleagues? Sure, absolutely.
I think that's the only thing that those are good for, or not even good for, but that's the main reason people use inspirational memes or whatever they're called from Pinterest on things like social media. It's just simple passive aggressive attacks of issues they don't want to resolve by going directly to the person that they're having the issue with. So I'm going to put something up that looks like I'm just posting something meaningful, but really it means I hope you die in your sleep.
And working in radio, it is great show prep and content.
Let's do a whole show. Every single, like that was, that is, you just read one of those and then weather next.
People. And you just hope that that one person is tuning in and they think to themselves, is he talking about me? Yes, Karen. Yes, I am. Stop eating my cheese in the staff kitchen. It's not yours.
What would that meme look like? Well, how would that sound? What exactly
would that Well, be? I can't tell you what font type I would use, but I assure you it would be a little bit, probably all capital letters with a nice sunset overlooking an ocean in the background.
No.
Possibly cursive.
They have replaced the signs, the motivational signs that used to be in office, the ones that said like teamwork and they were skydiving. That this is the new version of that. And instead of having that, we have these. And I don't think the world's a better place for it. 855-853-4802, our number at Real Ghost Stories Online. Let's jump over to our first letter of the day. It says, hey guys, it's Jordan from West Virginia again. I wrote in the other day about the ghost hunting, those ghosts haunting my college dorm. I was listening to the podcast titled TV Warning when I heard the story about the little girl that possibly attached itself to someone, and I was wondering if I might be in the same situation. When I was little, I had an imaginary friend named Sarah. I clearly remember her. Clearly, she was about my age at the time, 6 or 7, and had long brown hair with a pink ribbon in it, and a pink white dress, white socks, dress shoes. She looked like she walked right out of a Sunday school. I never felt scared, but when my parents tried to tell me she wasn't real, even though I could clearly see her, she started to get a little aggressive. I remember my bed shaking so hard my dad would come in and be angry because he thought I was jumping on it. My family was very religious and started to get worried because of the bed thing, and they could hear me talking to her. And even if they couldn't see her, they knew by now I was telling the truth. Eventually, my dad told me I needed to tell her to leave me alone. I was upset because I didn't want her to leave, but I did what I was told. I told her she needed to go. I told them that she was gone and was sad, but I never saw her again. I was about 14 or 15. We had moved on by now, and I now had a little brother. He was about 3. One day, I'm babysitting, and I hear him laughing in the kitchen, and I walked in there, and this ball is going around in circles, but he's not touching it. I panic and grab him, and he says to me, "Sissy, don't worry. It's Sarah." I was in disbelief, but this ball was still spinning. I told one of my friends we were staying the night a few days later, and she started to make fun of me, saying, "That's not real. If it were, she would do something now." About that time, my light fixture shattered. The funny thing is, the light was off, and there was no reason for that to happen. We screamed, and my friend started to apologize. I've never seen or heard from Sarah again. Thanks so much for your show. Like I said before, I've had many more stories and hope to listen to this and share them. Not an EPP yet, but when I get paid, I plan on it. Have a great day, guys. Can't wait to hear your thoughts. I think parents quite often jump to the conclusion that it's an evil thing that the children are interacting with, and in some cases it certainly can be. But I think if I was a child and you were denying that they were even there and you're just a child ghost and you're playing with the kids and the kids can see you, I would get a little frustrated too, and I'd probably act out just like kids do. Kids shake things, kids jump on things, kids break things if they're not being recognized. And that sounds like what was going on here with the Sarah ghost, is that she was acting like a kid would. It just seemed that much more bizarre because no one could see her. What do you think?
Whether you are a living being or you come back to visit, you don't like not getting your way.
Yeah.
If you come back to visit and you are being shushed under the rug, don't pay any attention to that. I assure you, she's not going to be more calm. She's not going to be more passive aggressive. She'll do what she needs to get your attention. And I think that indeed is the case right there. Yeah. I don't think I would be laughing. The baby was laughing because the ball would be moving, I would be crying.
But the thing is, to the little kids, you got to think about it, and this is so often in these situations, they don't know any better. They don't think that this is abnormal because every single thing they're experiencing for the most part is new. There's new things every single day. And if the random child that mom and dad can't see is just part of growing up and just part of being a kid, that doesn't mean it's abnormal. That just means, oh, that's just how it works. So
that is true. As a baby, until you have fear brought into your life, yeah, to then make you start to think, oh gosh, there may be something more to that, you live so pure, so fearlessly.
Mm-hmm. It's just the norm. And until someone points out that it's not the norm and you can understand what that even means, it's just there. A lot of kids have this situation with imaginary friends where they saw the imaginary friend. The parents didn't, and they wrote it off, but the kids didn't think anything of it. They interacted. They talked. My wife had that exact same experience. In fact, we had the revelation on this show 4 years ago. We were talking about imaginary friends, a story similar to this. And she was talking about her imaginary friend. And then I said, yeah, I had one too, but I, you know, you don't really see them. You just, you know, you pretend that they're there. And she was like, what do you mean you don't see them? Like you, they're imaginary. You don't actually see them. It's like, I saw mine. Like, well, that was more than an imaginary friend. And it was like a aha moment on the show. And she talked about it, and we even looked it up a little bit, and it was this boy who had this attire of like the 1920s or so that would come and play. And he said he had to go back to Oklahoma eventually and just disappeared and never came back again. But she saw him, she talked to him, played to him. Turns out there was a school down the road from where she grew up that exploded in a tragic explosion in the 1920s or so. Hundreds of kids were killed. And this kid really looked like he was from that era. We even found some pictures of like class pictures of that era. Never really found one specific kid that she thought was the one. We're talking grainy 1920s photos here. But the attire and all that very much matched up. And she kind of suspected that maybe this kid is from that area.
And you found out during the episode.
Live on the air. Yes. It was literally, live on the air for a podcast, but we didn't stop recording. We just rolled through it. And that was one of our first episodes that we had that moment. And
wow.
And it's funny, a lot of people then started calling in and saying, I had the exact same thing. So this is a common thing. Did you have an imaginary friend as a kid?
What
you would call an imaginary friend?
No. I had a stuffed animal. I sucked my thumb all the time. My mom would say, you know, you should probably stop doing that, or when you grow up, you're going to have trouble speaking. And as parents always give the best guidance later in life, I did have a speech impediment. But aside from, I mean, the boogeyman or scary or even a friend, I really don't have anything to add. I didn't. You mentioned that you did.
I did, but I never saw it, and I knew it was my conscience. It's just more like the little voice in your head telling you right or wrong, or Tony, don't do this. You know, just like when you're a little kid, that sort of thing. And so I called that my imaginary friend, and I assumed when other people were talking about their imaginary friend, that's what they were referring to, was like their conscience or the voice in their head, you know, telling them that stuff.
I think working in our profession where we get paid to talk for a living, I can't speak for you, but for me, I remember back to getting a talk boy. It was in Home Alone, mm-hmm. Home Alone 2.
Yes.
And I mean, when I got that for Christmas, I don't even think I had time for an imaginary friend because I was my own friend. Just every advertisement, the Sunday newspaper, I would record it and I would read the advertisement. 2 for 1, only $3.99. Ground chuck on sale at Kohl's. And then I would play it back and it would be slow motion. And yeah. That was the best, most amazing thing ever.
I never had a talk boy. I always wanted a talk boy. But I got something else from the Toys R Us. And it was this little, it was almost like a little console. And it had a little microphone to it, and you could put a cassette tape in there, and it would record whatever you were saying in the microphone. And it also had sound effect buttons that it would mix in with your talking. And there was, like, I mean, gunshots and explosions and UFOs and everything. So I would do my radio show, but then I would mimic horrific things happening in the studio. And maybe it was a little bit before my time. I was like, I'm not kidding, I was like 5 or 6, and a couple years ago, I was going through old cassette tapes, and I found just the tail end of a cassette, because I taped over these things with music as I got older, and mm-hmm. I so wish I still kept those tapes of me playing this stuff, but there was a tail end of maybe 2 minutes of one of these bits, where I'm sitting there in the studio, and I was pretending there were gunmen coming in, and then aliens were invading from outside, and I'm pressing all the buttons, and I'm literally pretending I'm on the air trying to deliver this message as gunmen come in and shoot me on the air, and then I think zombies actually end up coming through the window with the effects plus pressing and playing.
Now, this is still available. Can we download this? Is this an upcoming episode?
I would have to find the cassette tape. I know I kept it. I don't know where it is. It's somewhere. But, oh, my God, I just shook my head going, shit, I did that when I was 5.
Nothing like that could ever possibly happen in 2018.
I know. It was like, holy shit. I mean, I was kind of almost disturbed also. It's the level of how I was handling it. Because I'm like, you're only 5. Why weren't you?
There's a deeper meaning to this.
Go play with Legos, Tony. Just stop. This is, yeah. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online. Next letter. Hey, Tony and Sean, congrats on the book. I have a bittersweet story to share today. A few years back, we adopted a black and white tuxedo cat. His owner was moving, and we agreed to be his next forever home. AR had a personality to match his given name. He could be sweet and gentle and brave and feisty, all within a few minutes. He became our best buddy, especially as our other older cats passed away. He followed us around the yard and was intensely loyal. He nearly lost a leg after getting an infection from a puncture wound he got defending the house. After the surgery and neutering, we found out AR had been working through his 9 lives, hit by a car, mauled by a dog, and then the leg injury. Every time we took him to have his bandages changed, he'd snuggle into the vet's tech neck and hold the leg out for the vet. When we moved several states away, he came with us. Then 14 years old and starting to suffer from kidney disease, he was part of the family. As the next 2 years went by, he lost an eye to a blackberry bush and slowed down. He became iller but still held on. I was getting ready for a long business trip, gave the little guy some extra scratches and told him to go ahead to heaven when he was ready. About halfway through the trip, my husband texted me to tell me little AR wasn't going to make it through the night. I asked to talk to him, and my husband held the phone so close that he could hear me. I told him how much we loved him and that we'd never forget him. I said to him it was okay to let go. He picked the phone up to my ear, at my voice. Sounds silly, but I used to talk to him when I was gone, so this wasn't new. I shed a bucket of tears and crawled into bed. In the middle of the night, I woke up to hear the toilet flushing. I had my room, so there was no reason for this to happen. I drug myself to the bedroom, or to the bathroom, and checked the toilet out. No leaks, nothing odd, and the toilet flushed again. I headed back to bed, checking this time about 2:15 a.m. Next morning, I had a call from my husband saying that AR passed away just after 2 a.m. So what's so odd about all this? AR was a special cat. He used the toilet to pee. We always joke that he needed to learn to flush. I'm sure my mystery flusher the night before was AR coming to say goodbye and letting me know he could clean the toilet. Even if he didn't want to. Thanks again for the show and your caring support. I love being an EPP. I wish everyone the best with your projects. Mary in Washington State. That's a cute story of the cat coming back and doing the one thing that you really wanted it to do. But it's a cat, so it's going to say F you in some way, shape, or form. And it came back and said, here I am. I can't think of anything more fitting for a cat to say goodbye with.
Well done on AR's behalf to give a proud accomplishment feeling to finally see that AR could do that. But the interpretation to your point of, no, he probably was just coming back and saying, aha, think of me even more now.
I could have done this shit all along. I just didn't want to.
I could have done this months ago.
Consider yourself lucky that I learned to shit on the toilet. Now you want me to flush? Go fuck yourself, people. I think that's how cats feel. That's how they look at things.
Well, then, to take such a heartwarming story and pander it off as cats, little fuckers.
I love cats. Like, I wish I wasn't allergic because we have one cat, but he lives out. He doesn't live outside. He lives in our garage, which is all finished off and nice and cozy and warm and heated, so no one can complain. And if we didn't have him, we wouldn't be able to have a cat. But that's where he is, so I can go see him and play with him and all that. He's loved. But I wish he could be in the house because I just think they're hilarious. And I love their little attitude. So I say the cat fuck you lines with love.
And I believe they're amazingly intelligent creatures. They piss you off just enough where they know that line that they're about to cross. And then they're adorable.
Yeah.
For 7 minutes, for 7 hours, for a day. Mm-hmm. And then they go back to almost crapping in the litter box. Almost crapping in the litter box.
Mine are pretty successful at that.
Little present there, little Christmas present in April when you come home from work and you're wondering where that absolutely nauseating smell, and then you look, and did the kids get Tootsie Rolls for trick-or-treating on Saturday? Oh, Lord.
That's not a Tootsie Roll.
So, cats, there you have it.
855-853-4802, our number, Real Ghost Stories Online is the program. Ghostpodcast.com is the website to get all the episodes in advance, commercial free. Think of that. $5 a month. Support the show. Keep it on the air. It'd be nice. Do it as a gift for yourself, a gift for us, a gift for the cat in your life. Letter says, hello, my name's Jason. I'm 37 years old from South Bend, Indiana. Love your show. Would like to share a few of my experiences with you. My first story occurred 10 years ago when I joined a local ghost hunting group and went out on to an abandoned church cemetery that was notorious for paranormal occurrences. It was the middle of summer, and the temperature on this night was 84 degrees. Our group was walking around, taking pictures and doing EVP sessions, and suddenly, I walked by a grave and felt an extreme temperature change. I called the group over so that we could take some temperature readings, and sure enough, our baseline reading all around was 84 degrees. But in front of this grave, our temperature reading was 52 degrees. Not long after, we were preparing to do an EVP session at this gravesite, and suddenly a small group of kids came riding up on their bikes. We called them over to show them what we discovered, and it was at this point that we received a confession from one of the boys. He explained to us that he and his friends were out here a week ago playing around at the grave with a Ouija board, and now one of the boys has an entity wreaking havoc in his home, and they can't get it to leave. At this point, we decided to go to this gravesite alone as it had already been disturbed, and out of fear that we might go with something negative as well. My second experience is more of a question than a story. I'm a third shift truck driver, and about 2 months ago, I started seeing 11 past the hour whenever I would look at the clock. At first, I just brushed this off as a pure coincidence, but it continued happening more often, sometimes as much as 10 times a day. I began doing research trying to find out what the number 11 might mean. Unfortunately, I could find nothing up to this point. Wondering if maybe a loved one who had passed on is trying to get my attention or possibly send me a message. I lost my grandma, who I was very close to 2 years ago, and I carry her blanket on the road with me since I sleep in my truck. I felt her presence many times over the years. Lost my father-in-law to a tragic auto accident 1 year ago, and I've never had the chance to say goodbye to him. There are times when I suddenly get a numb, warming sensation on the back of my head, and it will run down my neck and back then and fade away after a while. I believe this is my dad and grandma visiting me when I experience this. Anyway, sorry this was so long. I love your show and would appreciate any feedback you might have for me on my experiences. Any feedback you may have, Sean?
I'm confused here. The Ouija board, they were messing around with it, and then upon them messing around with the Ouija board, that's then when the warm feeling on the back of their neck and with the blanket?
No, that was the first part of the story. It's kind of a two-parter where it got combined. The Ouija board they were playing with, and then the entity basically came out after that. It was more of a childhood story. They were playing with it at a gravesite, so...
I think there's absolute truth to that. I mean, in cases for me, August 18th is my grandpa's birthday. He was born back in 1917, and my dad up in Wisconsin, as I'm here in the lovely state of Arkansas, every now and again talk to him about his dad, my grandpa, and specifically around his birthday, he always goes and visits him at the cemetery and the mausoleum. And I will make reference to say, tell him hi for me. And, you know, goosebumps. And maybe not a physical touch or feeling like somebody is touching me, but it is always a certain feeling there that I, you know, truly believe that my grandpa and my dad's dad is just saying hi. Thanks for talking about me. It's my birthday. So I would absolutely say the second part of the story is... just coming back to say hi and reminding you about me.
And hey, here I am. I agree. 855-853-4802, our number at Real Ghost Stories Online. Let's go to a caller. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey guys, my name is Erin. I'm calling from Brevard County, Florida. So I have two stories that I want to tell you about. One is when I was about 8 or 9 years old. My dad works at the Kennedy Space Center. And he had Take Your Child to Work Day. This was before 2001, before the terrorist attacks. So parents could bring their kids in for Take Your Kid to Work Day. And I got to, you know, do the really cool kid things, like have your name on a shuttle tile and, you know, I got like little memorabilia things. At the end of the day, my dad and I, he took me out onto Patrick Air Force Base. Or Cape Canaveral Air Force Station, I should say, where the Apollo 1 site was. And that is it's a protected place. It's remaining in place. They're not doing anything to it to prevent it from falling apart. It's just, if it falls apart, it falls apart. That's it. So we went out there, and I was, of course, 8 or 9 years old, and I was like, Dad should really be out here, and he's like, yeah, fine. So there's that. So we went out there, and we got to, you know, walk underneath it and walk underneath the structure that held, you know, the testing stuff and, you know, where the astronauts actually died. And I heard screaming, and I felt like every part of my body was just on fire. Like I was just so hot. And yes, it's Florida, and yes, Florida's hot, but this was like an unremarkable hot. So And I told my dad, I said, do you hear that? And he's like, no, I didn't hear anything. I'm like, they're screaming. I said, someone is screaming. He's like, I don't hear anything. He's like, and there's nobody out here but us. And because, I mean, it's far away from like all the buildings, very far away from everything else. And so you like, you have to know where it is to go there. And you have to have like a specific, you know, you have to have a badge and stuff like that. So I just said, I can't stay here. I can't, we have to go. We have to go. And so I left. We went home. And this year, 2018, I went on a tour, a bus tour. They opened up to the general public, I should say. It's for those who pay extra money for the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex to... you know, you get to go and see the old launch sites from the old rockets and stuff like that, from Gemini, Apollo, Mercury, you know, that kind of thing. So I went out there again, and this was, I'm 26 now. That was when I was 8. And it was, the amount of decay that had happened, and it's very rusted. You can't go underneath it anymore because there's a fence around the actual, part of it that, you know, things are falling down, it's falling apart, so you can't go underneath it. But I still felt like my skin was just on fire. It felt so hot, and apparently that is pretty common out there, to hear the screaming of the three astronauts. So that was my first ever encounter. My second one was when I was about 13 years old. My parents have a van, and it was parked towards the road. So it was in, just pointed towards the road, like in our side yard, so you could see down the street. And I was sitting in the van, you know, messing around, whatever. And I looked out the front window, or the windshield, and I saw a little boy. It's see-through kid. And he was holding a little teddy bear. And he waved at me. And then I waved back, which was like, okay, there's a kid in the street. This isn't good. So I watch him. After he waves at me, he turns and he walks through the wall of my neighbor's house. And I just said, what just happened? And I went inside and I told my parents that there was a little boy and he was see-through, and I couldn't see him, and he went walk through the wall. And my parents were like, you're imagining things, you're crazy. So that's how that went. But the little boy, what I believe that little boy, who that little boy was, down a couple blocks away from me, a little boy around the age of, I think he was like 4 or 5 or 6, somewhere around that very small age. He got hit by an ice cream truck and he unfortunately died. And by his memorial right next to his house, there was a little teddy bear that was just there. His parents had left it there. Just, you know, like a memorial, you know, what have you. And, you know, I would drive by that every day when, like, my mom was taking me to go to school, or we would go into, like, the store or something. We would drive past that house, and I would always see the teddy bear. And after I saw the little boy, the teddy bear was gone. Now, obviously, something could have taken it, someone could have stolen it, whatever. But I truly believe that the little boy took the teddy bear away. So those are my two stories. If you want to use it for the show, go ahead. That'd be great. I love listening to you guys. I've never called in before, so I just wanted to, you know, call you and tell you what's going on, or what my stories are. And I hope you guys use this for the show. I'll be listening in to see if you do. So I hope you guys have a great day or a great night. And thank you so much. Bye.
Thank you for sharing that story with us. You know, it's not very often anymore that I hear a story about a public site or a public location that I haven't heard anything about at some point in time, even just a little bit. And I can honestly say, though, I have never heard the story of the Apollo 1 site having any sort of activity on it. Honestly, I didn't even know it still existed, because most of those have been updated, changed over, you know, cemented over, rebuilt over and over. So I Googled it while she was sharing that story, and I saw it's amazing. It is still there. I was just at the Kennedy Space Center a couple months ago. We probably drove by it. We did one of those tours all around the area, and it's essentially in a swamp is where the Kennedy Space Center is, just to kind of put it in perspective. There's alligators everywhere, just wandering over the streets and all that. So it's something you kind of got to be aware of. But it is kind of a chilling looking site. You can see the burn marks on everything and how they where it was, you know, sitting. And when you understand what happened, that's really disturbing that she's hearing screams and other people have as well.
To almost relive it happening.
And you have to think at that point that it's probably not them, literally experiencing it over and over and over. I'm guessing it's probably more of a residual type thing. At least that's what you would hope. And it's just that tremendous energy replaying itself, and not necessarily them, the spirits of those men, having to go through that over and over again.
I mean, it is words can't really describe a feeling being in that something that, and I am not by any means belittling something that is not as profound or affects as many people. The events that we're recording this right around the day after 17-year anniversary of September 11th. Yep. Have you visited any of the sites where this, I mean, have you been to the Pentagon? Have you been to New York? Have you been to Pennsylvania to be in that physical location?
I have been to Ground Zero. I was at Ground Zero in about 8 years ago.
Did you feel, I mean, what I'm trying to get at is something so profound, so affected so many people, not only the people that tragically lost their life, but it affected all of us. All of that to be in one physical location, you would just have to imagine that it just overtakes you of being in that location, regardless if they've built new things or cement or what have you. Did you feel anything?
Yeah, I mean, it was a very emotional. I mean, this was prior to the memorial being open. It was literally still a giant hole in the ground. They were just beginning construction on the new tower. You didn't even know what it was yet. You just saw this, it was about 8 stories up. So it really wasn't a big building yet. But you could kind of see through some of the fencing that they had up, and they had it really covered so you couldn't see into the pit very much. But you could still see, like, one of the office buildings still had windows blown out of it. Wow. 10 years, it was 9 years at the time after the fact, that had not yet been fixed. It was a tremendously emotional experience walking around there. We were just talking yesterday at dinner. What's really weird about this whole thing being 17 years after the fact, is trying to, and I knew it would happen someday, trying to tell your kids about it and trying to explain it in any way that makes a shred of impact on them the way it impacted you. Anyone who lived through it, whether they were there or just was a witness to it through television in this country, or anywhere in the world, really, just being alive on that day, the world changed, obviously. But that is a very difficult, and I'll even say frustrating, thing to try and communicate to an 11-year-old. She's starting to get it now. They learned about it in school, and she'll tell me how they what they taught her that day, and kind of how they talked about United 93 yesterday. She'd heard about it, didn't know all the details, but now she's to the age where they're starting to really kind of get into it with them. And it's interesting because it's essentially history, and it's out of the workbooks. And here's what, and she's like, I heard it, like, this happened or that happened. And I'm thinking back to like trying to ask my grandparents about World War II or like, what was it like on this day when that happened? And it is the most difficult thing to talk about without getting emotional. It was such, you know, it was such a traumatic day for all of us. And I was trying to recount to her. I was on the air and I had to reiterate what was going on back to the studio, to our morning show, Callaway on the Rise. And I may interject humor here, otherwise it just gets too damn depressing.
Not after 51 to the top.
Bob on the clock. That's what he'd always say. It was 8:08. And we had our conference room TV was working.
I just got that.
Our studio TV was not working. And it was right across the hall. And we're talking 3 feet. And I was watching what was happening and then running back into the studio and reporting back what was happening for the first time they're hearing it, unless a caller had already broken it to them, what was going on. And I remember the moment the tower fell, the first one, running back in, and then I was probably like a dog because I was sitting there like completely out of breath. And keep in mind, 3 foot walk, out of breath. And then I remember just them looking at me, Tony, what is it? What is it? You know, like you're talking to your pet.
Yeah.
And I couldn't speak. I had no words to express what I had just seen. And that is, to me, I think one of the most definitive moments of that day for me personally, just of that moment and just the gravity of everything really hitting me at that time. But then trying to stay on the air and be on and just talk through it. I mean, it was a trauma looking back on it. I mean, it was obviously a traumatic day, but, you know, trying to report on it was a trauma in itself. Nowhere near the level that the people who were actually there went through. I'm not in any way trying to compare myself to that, but it was, that was how I went through the day. And trying to explain this to your kids, in a way, I'm happy that they've never experienced anything like that. I hope they never have to experience anything like that. But there is a little bit of me that I hope it impacts them a bit more than just something that they read online, you know, or studied in school, because it obviously was such a impactful day on all of us, to say the least.
And do you believe, because you were having to live it, then it had to go through your brain to be able to communicate it, to inform a mass audience. Do you believe, or did you go through a time, a day later, a week later, a month later, for it to fully sink in as a consumer? Because obviously in the profession we are in, we have to convey information in some situations as we are learning it. Because you, adrenaline is possibly the wrong word, but you were finding out information such to a high magnitude, and then immediately before you even could digest it, mm-hmm. get it out to your colleagues for them to then get it out to the people listening. Did you then have kind of a second, pardon my French, but holy shit moment of it actually hitting you like a brick wall? For me, I was not on the air. I just woke up and I 100% took it in as a normal human being, mm-hmm. not to then have to prepare it to pass along to other colleagues and talk about it. Do you remember that?
I think a lot of it was hitting me as a brick wall as the day was going on. I was only 18 at the time. I'd already been in radio for 5 years or so. Maybe I was 19 at the time. I had some experience, but not enough to, I think, be really super well composed, for lack of a better term. I did keep it together on the air. I was out of breath several times, just with lack of things to say. I don't think I broke down on the air. I don't remember. That day was such a blur. I would say at the end of the night, when we finally went home, I don't remember what time I went home at. I remember going to my apartment, and it's like, what do you do? Do you keep watching? Do you take a break? You know, what the hell's going to happen next? And for whatever reason, I liked the James Taylor song Up on the Roof was getting played. If anybody was playing music, they were playing very safe songs and stuff that people found cathartic. And I remember that one feeling somewhat like that, and listening to that on the roof of my apartment building in downtown Wausau, and just It was a beautiful day out. I mean, the sun was setting. It was a sunny day in a lot of the country that day. And it was such a weird feeling of this is this wonderful looking evening aesthetically, but the worst damn day I hope I ever have to live through. And whenever I hear that song, it hits me because I now connect it with that. But it hit me then. I kind of let it out. But I don't think there's ever been, for me, there has never been like a brick wall moment of, okay, I'm letting it all out. I just think it's still all there and just still gets let out, when I think about it too much.
It was, I think at least for me in again, going back to our, profession of getting paid to talk for a living, many people, who do not have the ability to communicate so effectively, so smoothly about information they know a lot or a little about. What I find interesting and challenging is when you are talking about something and you are really talking, I find it difficult, to be able to really truly talk about it and to put in words that make sense, opposed to somebody that's listening to you saying, what are you trying to say? It's very hard to, even to this day, 17 years later, when you're in that frame of mind and you really kind of take it all in, to voice what you're feeling, what you're thinking, how it all went down. I know for me, I got you by a couple months, so I was 18 as well, was going to school in Wausau. So we were in the same city, and mm-hmm. I had just gotten a job at the radio station that you had been at for several years. Later that summer, the following summer, I should say, I had an internship at a local TV station, and there were hours of footage, and I think more so the curiosity of a lot of raw footage
yeah.
that was shot that day that never hit the airwaves for good reason. And again, curiosity, I think, is the word. It got to the point where I don't want to see that anymore, but yeah. you then were just drawn in to see, and several documentaries and, you know, things that I've read and seen, and whatever your thoughts are of how that came to be or how it happened, just the politics aside, countries aside, just that it happened yeah. and a human being to then have that, see that happen. Even though you or I did not have a direct loved one that lost their life that day, but to then be able to move on and then to be able to kind of function with your normal senses, to not break down, mm-hmm. Is something that what's very interesting, at least in our age bracket, mid-30s, at least for me, from what I remember, it's the first world historic moment that I was alive for. You know, you grow up hearing about World War I, World War II, all these mm-hmm. things that happen that you learn about in social studies or history class, and this is the first time. So when there is a day that I help make a baby and become a dad to, you know, reflect upon that, I'll look to you to advise how to go about it and how to communicate that message to the children.
There's one thing, and when it's age appropriate, I want to do this with the kids. Neither of them are there yet. I'm thinking a couple more years with our older one. But there's a great site, archive.org, that literally has the coverage from like the first 3 days of it. And it starts about a half hour before the first plane hit. And it's of every network television that was recorded that day, from ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, I think CNN's on there as well. And it starts with half hour before, and I was watching it yesterday. It's like, and this is today on NBC. And mm-hmm. and they're talking, they're interviewing people. Here's a McDonald's ad. Here's a CarMax ad. And they're just normal day. And then
some fall family favorites, yeah. Halloween preparations,
they're
your
cooking
normal
food.
Mundane
yep.
stuff.
And then we're getting news about an accident at the World Trade and you can watch this thing hour by hour play out in real time coverage. And I am going to have them watch that one day when they're older. Literally, we're going to sit down and we're going to sit there and we're going to watch a good 12 hours of it. And I think it's important for them to see it from the half hour beforehand, because it's the normal world is what it feels like. It feels like today almost, mm-hmm. Where it's just somewhat safe. and then just how quickly everything changed and how dramatic that was. I mean, you can watch all the documentaries you want, you can see all the clips you want, but if you weren't alive for that day, it's very difficult to grasp, and I'm sure that really won't even quite do it. But I think it's the best possible way you can attempt to get a feel for what happened and an understanding of what happened is by watching that thing in real time. It's difficult, it's horrible, but I think it's something that if you're a citizen of this country, you should have a better understanding of.
And
I'll leave it at that.
Well put. I just cannot even imagine if social media, what it is today, it was back then. And you know what? I'm thankful that it wasn't.
I am too. There was no Twitter. And that's a concept they even I was asked about the other day. It's like, well, you know, did people like get their phones out and video? Like, no, honey, that didn't exist. There were no camera phones. That was not, people had cell phones.
You took pictures, yeah. And then you had to wait a couple weeks to hopefully hope that you weren't blinking.
There was no such thing as a camera phone yet. But it's amazing. People, they don't get it. It's a different perspective. And it just kind of is what it is. Anyway, I know we kind of talked about that towards the end of the show, but we wrapped up all of our ghost stories. And I think this is kind of a conversation that a lot of us have been either having or thinking about in the past couple of weeks as this goes to air. So I thought, no, this doesn't hurt to talk about this a little bit and get it out every once in a while. So thanks everybody for listening. That's going to wrap up today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. Hopefully you enjoyed the show. If you like it, keep us on the air. Become an EPP extra podcast person over at ghostpodcast.com. You get all the advanced episodes of the show commercial free. It's only $5 a month, and EPP bonus episodes, bonus new ones every single week. Ghostpodcast.com. Until next time, for Sean, I'm Tony. Thanks for listening to another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.